Well, happy Easter, everyone. This is one of my favorite Sundays of the year, and I hope it is yours too. I hope you're going to enjoy some time that's meaningful for you this afternoon in rest and relaxation, and maybe out in nature, maybe with some family, maybe with some friends. I was reminded this week of the Easter season when I read a quote again by Czeslaw Milosz, who's a Czech poet, who wrote a book of poetry, and one of the poems in there was called Six Lectures on Verse. It ends with these lines, "And so we plod along in hope. And now let everyone answer for himself, has he risen?" That's a great line from a person who went through the revolution in what was then Czechoslovakia back in the 90s. This season, we've been talking about dark times and dark woods and struggles. The Lenten series has been a series called The Gifts in the Dark Wood. And so we talked a little bit about the gift of struggle, a struggle that reminds us that we always have a choice. We talked a little bit about the gifts of uncertainty and the gift of getting lost, which ironically open up new pathways sometimes for us. We talked about the gift of emptiness, which carves out a space within us that can be filled with something new. We talked about the gift of temptation with its demands that we pause and think about our real priorities. And we talked last week about the gift of misfits, of the uniquely gifted and uniquely flawed community that goes with us on our journey through the dark wood and that helps us be as perfect as we can be. Sarah Burkett, last week, is she here today? She wrote something real. She said something really awesome after the service last week. She said to someone, "Nobody's perfect, and we're all perfect." I thought, good for Sarah Burkett. Well, today we end up that series thinking about the gift of life, the life that's in the dark wood. I was reminded again of this yesterday as I was sitting on our front porch, and I don't know, some of you have been to our house, but you could probably picture that our front porch overlooks a forest, but in front of that porch, there's a sort of a bed where there's a couple cornelian cherry trees, cornus mass. They're a type of dogwood. And in our viewscape from that front porch seating, what I noticed yesterday was that the only thing that had any color in front of me were the little four-petaled remains of the blooms of that dogwood tree. And staring there at the scene, I saw these gray, barren trunks of trees everywhere. Beautiful deep blue sky. And just these little tiny hints of yellow. And for a minute, I thought to myself, wow. The first signs of spring, the first signs of something that is alive, the only thing that is awake. And then I thought, wrong. Because we all know, and many of you who are biologists in this place know, that at this season of the year, there's an awful lot of things that are awake, even though they look barren and gray. And so I imagine to myself all the sap surging up into those trunks right now, pulsing its way up into the tiniest of little branches. I imagined all of the tiny little ends of those branches bursting with cellular activity in the buds, slowly swelling up, and they're just ready at any time to go bang. And I thought, this is not the only thing that's awake. Everything around me is terrifically, vigorously, irrepressibly, energetically alive. It is not dead. I only think it's so. That's not terribly complicated or deep stuff. It's a kind of a wonder that I think is as old as the human imagination. It's a poetry that is grounded deep in our psyche and in our cycles and in our soil. And we know that we all live in a sort of post-Enlightenment Western world in which people think about this particular Christian ritual and celebration, this celebration of Easter, in kind of sometimes anachronistic ways. we're drawn at this time of year into debates that mistake one time for another, debates about whether Jesus really came back to life. And here I could go on an excursus about the differences between ancient and modern views of history, or give you some reflections about the differences between truth and fact, or I can go into some comparison of the scientific and religio-poetic ways of looking at truth. But most of you have heard me say that for years and years and years, and you've heard it all before, and you don't need to hear it again today. And most of us really don't need that sort of thing anyway. Because when you're out there in the trees or in the fields or in the barnyard, bursting with little baby cries of animals at this time of year, we know down deep in our bones that what makes the resurrection of Jesus important is not that it was a historical event, but that it is an archetypal truth. Jesus, the just one, the lover of souls, the one who hoped for the best for both friends and enemies alike, was cruelly and unjustly put to death by the powers that be. But wouldn't you know it? It was impossible that the grave should hold him there. It is impossible that the grave should hold him there. To confess the resurrection, I think, is to speak an archetypical truth, something we know to be true already down deep in our truest of hearts. To celebrate the resurrection is to insist upon the central claim of Christianity, to insist upon the claim that light shines out in darkness, and the darkness shall not, will not, cannot overcome it. It's to insist that life is stronger than death. It's to insist that goodness is stronger than evil. It's to insist that love is stronger than any indifference or divisiveness or hatred that is ever mounted against it. It's to insist that though the moral arc of the universe may be very, very long, it always bends towards justice. That's exactly right. And so to confess this is to confess our deepest conviction that nothing is impossible, nothing that is good is impossible to the God that is good and desires the good. And so we confess, the Latin word is interesting here, credo. It's different than the word assensus. Credo means I rest in. It means I anchor myself in. It means I hitch my wagon to. I can say 2 + 2 = 4. I believe that. I assensus that. Assensus means to give assent to a fact. But I don't credo 2 + 2 = 4. I don't believe it in the sense of the Latin word credo. I don't hitch my wagon to the fact that 2 + 2 = 4. But I credo, I believe, I hitch my wagon to the resurrection, which is to say, I hitch my wagon to life. It's to confess that God is always rising up the good. It's to confess our steadfast confidence that the good cannot be kept from rising again. And in fact, that it is always already rising, whether or not we even are aware of it or acknowledge it. It is always rising up. We call this basic confession hope. It's the same thing that we see in the barrenness of the trees and the knowledge that the sap is surging upwards, ready to burst. Hope. Hope is not some sort of mamby-pamsy optimism. There's a difference between hope that is rooted in reality and optimism that is something different, vapid, shallow hopefulness. Cornel West says of optimism, optimism would lead us to think that things might get better even if we just keep on doing the same old things we've been doing. It's kind of like putting our fingers in our ears and going, la, 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 la. You know, that's optimism. That's not what we're talking about when we talk about Christian hope. Hope is rooted in reality, rooted in what we know to be true. What we confess in the resurrection is hope. It's grounded in the understanding that there is an eternal and indelible sacredness to what is good and right. And that is true no matter whether or not anyone acknowledges it at all. Hope is grounded in an understanding of the way things fundamentally are and the way they fundamentally must be. Hope gives us courage to boldly act, even when doubt is warranted, because we know the universe is with us, and that goodness is with us, and that future generations are with us, and that God, the sacred, the better way for all, the eternal, which grounds the temporal, is with us. We know that to be fact. That's different than simple optimism, and we need that. We need that hope desperately right now. Because the world is in need of some serious healing. Many, many people, many of us, find ourselves sometimes in the dark woods of life. And that's why we've, during this entire season of Lent, been talking about the gifts that are in the dark wood. People find themselves in jobs that may be taxing or exhausting or unfulfilling or without jobs and wanting to find a job that will pay them enough to live on. We find people struggling to keep their friendships and families together. We find people straining for meaningful relationships, which may seem too few and far together to really give us the strength we need to carry on. We see people reeling from losses and unavoidable life transitions, which feel like deep forest mazes from which we cannot begin to extract ourselves. And everything around us seems at times like that to be dead. Everything but perhaps the smallest of the little yellow flowering first signs of spring. Everything else might seem lifeless and barren, but this is precisely where hope says no. Hope says that the world is not dying, that it is rising, that it's not over yet. For we open our eyes to all that is good and sacred, and we find that there is a vigorous, irrepressible aliveness which is coming anew into the world day after day after day. That dark wood isn't just a personal phenomenon, socially and politically. Isn't it true that we feel like we're in a dark wood sometimes? And I think this is a statement that resonates with many of us in this room. Sometimes we feel like we're going backwards and forwards. It's like walking the labyrinth, and you think you're almost to the center, and whoops, you turn around the other direction. Feels like the journey is long and never-ending. Just this week, we've been awash in the news about the horrific violence in Brussels. The coverage of this in the news has not only reminded us that there are multitudes of people still carrying that ideology that violence is the best option. It's also reminded us of the terribly skewed nature of our media and of its dark power. Many of us know that if you look outside of the world of mainstream coverage, that there have been, actually in the past 2 years or so, 14 different attacks by ISIS. But our media seems only to be interested in reporting the 4 ISIS attacks that occurred in majority non-Muslim Western cities. So even though the vast majority of people who have been killed at the hands of this radical group have been other non-radicalized Muslims, Americans are given the impression by the selective reporting of our news that those Muslims are attacking us. And thus, we have politicians right now whipping hordes of unfortunately uninformed Americans into a frenzy about Islam without real reason. And we're seeing our Muslim friends and neighbors right here in Columbus being verbally abused, pushed down on the sidewalks, pregnant women spat at, hate mails. We've seen people being intimidated, their jobs threatened. It's a dark wood time for us. It's a dark wood time for our country. And right now in the dark wood of normal everyday life for many, many people, hundreds and thousands of people feel like they have no real access to a job that could pay them a minimum wage, that will allow them to live, that they're barely making ends meet, that they're burdened with loans and debt. Right now in the dark woods of America, LGBT people continue to struggle with bigotry and injustice. We saw just this last week in North Carolina's ruling about restrooms, outright discrimination towards people who just want to use the right restroom or to keep and do a job just like any other person. or to be able to rent an apartment just like any other person, or be able to shop and eat at the same businesses that other people shop and eat at. Yeah, we find ourselves in a dark wood. And it does look like there's a lot of death and darkness and bigotry and meanness and hatred out there right now. We find ourselves sometimes feeling like we're in a cold, dark tomb of earth, wondering, waiting, hoping for something that is coming called resurrection. And that's where hope comes in. And that's the thing. It is coming. And we can't lose sight of that. Who would have thought as little as 5 years ago that we would have been able to say that same-sex couples, same-gender couples in America would be able to celebrate a legal wedding in every state of the United States? Who would have thought that 5 years ago? Who would have thought 5 years ago that a pope would ascend in the Roman Catholic Church who is a South American liberation theologian who for the first time in any of us living's history is going to boldly ask the world's 1 billion Catholics to focus for a change on economic and social justice for many of the world's most vulnerable people, especially for the poor, and who would write an encyclical on climate justice? Who would have thought of that 5 years ago? And we can see, if we look right now around at what's going on all around this country, a swelling of interest by not middle-aged people, young people, who are engaged in the political process now in a way that they've never, ever been before. Hundreds of thousands of people showing up in ways that we've never seen them before. A resurgence of interest. People who have grown up and seen their parents, my generation, struggle with dual incomes and not be able to make it. Working long hours for less. Not being able to have health care. Being bankrupted by health care. Carrying an enormous debt load. And these young people are saying, wait a minute, we don't want to live like that. We want to live like the other developed countries in the world. And they're showing up. And they're saying not words of hate, but they're saying not we, us. They're showing up and they're saying everybody should be able to live without discrimination in this country. LGBTQ people, everybody. That we should think about what we're doing when we have created this prison industrial system that disenfranchises so many people from our economy and from our political system. They're showing up. I would never have thought 5 years ago that this could ever happen, ever in my life. And so I look at our youth and I see hope. I look at our youth in this church who are leaders in their political parties. I see leaders of groups at school in the environmental club. I see leaders of the GSA. I see people who are going on trips to listen to Nobel Prize winners talk about landmine removal and women's rights. I see kids in this church that are engaged. And I think, amen, it is rising. It is rising up. I look at the people in this church and I see hope. I go to justice advocacy meetings in Newark all the time, and almost always I see a handful of core people who are members of this church there, no matter where I go. I see people in this church organizing students for peace and justice work. I see people in this congregation organizing for criminal justice. I see people in this congregation keeping the doors open at the Sparta so that returning citizens have a second shot in life. I see people in this church leading in the organization of the Columbus Open and Affirming Churches to mobilize churches to get out there for the Gay Pride Parade. I see people at this church pouring hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars into wonderful, forward-looking causes. Who would have thought that a couple years ago there would be solar panels all over the top of the Yes Club? That could not have happened without the people in this church and in this community. We have to look beyond what we immediately see and immediately think, because it's not just the little yellow petals that are the reality. Resurrection is the reality. Let us look just at the gray bare trunks and see nothing. Let us look into them and see life surging up anew. Let us look at the hard seed and not simply see stillness, but see the potential of Christ arising again. And that, for me, is the import of the phrase, Christ is risen. For Christ must always rise. It's good poetry, folks. It's the deepest kind of truth. It's the truth we hitch our wagons to, that Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. You got a little egg in front of you. And you are welcome just to think about not anything that looks dead in there, but what is potentially alive. There's something in there for you. You can open up and look. And if you don't like what you can get, if it's kind of like a fortune cookie, you can share it with your neighbor and trade and swap. Maybe it's like baseball cards. I don't know. But it's for you. I'm going to invite our choir to come forward today. And I'm going to invite our communion servers also to come forward and hold the space for us to enact again in common bread and in common cup our conviction that our one life, rooted down deep in the sacred and eternal soil of abiding, unconditional compassion, God, call it what you will, that one common life in love, that one life is an expression of what will always be bursting forth even in the darkest of our days, even in the deepest of our dark woods, the persistent intrusion of vines and branches a tangle with irrepressible life. Jesus says, if you abide in me, and if I abide in you, together we will bear much fruit. This is the word of God. Thanks be to God.